much sights to show you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 49th episode of the Sirens of Scream, the geek podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. I'm Melissa Megan, and I'm here with my lovely co-hosts, Jackie DeVore.
Hello.
And Sierra Houck.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello there.
I have been informed that today is World UFO Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it happy sure World is. UFO Day. And yesterday was Canada Day?
It was? Yes.
Jackie, give me some good Canadian horror.
Yeah, let's go on here.
Tell me what the Canadians have for us.
Pontypool is Canadian. Mm-hmm. Cube, Ginger Snaps, which has been on my server to rewatch for quite a while now, so now is like a good time for it. Have you guys seen Ginger Snaps?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have.
It's ridiculous and I love it. American Mary, Antiviral, Videodrome, Black Christmas, which is awesome, Prom Night, and Tucker and Dale versus Evil is a short list of Canadian horror there.
Are these like horror made in Canada or made by Canadians? Or
that's a fair question.
And combination of both, maybe?
We'll say it's a combination of both.
Okay. It's a mixed bag. Sierra, did you celebrate World UFO Day today?
I haven't really had a chance to do anything, so I've just been at work so far today.
Oh.
Since we started recording in the last 2 minutes, I've been thinking of what people could do to celebrate. Of course, this will be released in a little while, so it'll be like a past celebration.
What are your suggestions for celebrating World UFO Day? I imagined you like wearing like UFO pins or something.
Or like a tinfoil hat or something.
Or like little alien baubles.
A very recent episode on Lore, I think it's 3 episodes back from the most recent, called Road Trip, is about a very classic alien abduction story that is called one of the first abductions. And we talked about it on our alien podcast. Mm-hmm. But of course, Aaron Mankey does an amazing telling of it. So I'd say you listen to that. Also on Netflix is Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction, which is the most like quintessential like paranoia. We found this alien autopsy tape and we're going to like pick it apart and see if it's real or not, or if it's doctored, and like everybody's debating over if the government like covered it up or this is just a prank or something. So that one is super fun and it's very like 90s vibes. And it's when I think when most people think of aliens, this is the alien that they maybe picture. It's very X-Files adjacent.
Big head, big eyes,
mm-hmm, little body. Yeah, I want to say it's one of the aliens from Roswell, but maybe I'm making that up.
I feel like we can go ahead and exclude Roswell as a real possibility these days because the president would have to know about it, right? Like, well, there's no way Trump would have kept that a secret.
One of the many reasons among, you know, not putting children in cages and not taking away women's health access to healthcare, Hillary said that she was going to release the truth about aliens if she became president. Really fucked it up. I feel like if there is information about aliens that Trump should have, they're probably just keeping it from him. Yeah. And also, they did recently come out and say that there were government programs that were following UFOs. And studying
space force. That's true.
Yeah, and it's everybody true. Just ignored it because we were like overloaded with information and we're like, we can't worry about what's happening in outer space right now because the world's on fire.
Yeah, there's so much shit going on.
Yeah, we need to worry about it.
Maybe that's why we need the space force. Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh man, I don't know if you guys have seen the hilarious video that somebody made with the Space Force theme song.
Mm-mm.
But oh god.
If you haven't, you need to. Unfortunately, it will get stuck in your head.
Oh, no.
Space Force. That's great.
No. Although, while we're on the topics of space and aliens, I do want to throw out that the Expanse finale has happened for season 3, and it's fantastic and amazing. And if you like sci-fi, you should get your shit on that, because it's amazing.
Nice.
You know, when I first brought up the Expanse, I made fun of Drew for bringing it up every chance that he had.
I know you've become one of them.
Now I'm the tinfoil hat wearing asshole that's talking to anybody. I can't about it. Funny.
Is it The Wire for you?
It is. And you know what? I actually just recently rewatched The Wire too. God damn it.
Just so everybody knows, I'm going to call this episode Topics Are Hard. Because, yeah, we're going on 2 years of doing this show now. We figured out that, you know, coming up with new things to talk about is becoming more and more difficult just because we've always held such a high standard for ourselves of having these giant topics that we have to research and have lots and lots of information.
Apart. Yeah.
Yeah, like, we get librarian about it.
We go hard.
Yeah, we want to write a whole dissertation.
Yeah. So we're trying to lighten up a little bit, and you know, it's summertime and we all have a lot of shit going on. So we're just gonna have some fun tonight and not do the topic thing besides talking about horror and just sharing a lot of cool things that we've been seeing around with you guys. And Jackie.
Yo.
Speaking of your Expanse finale. One of the news items that I have is related to that. The Expanse is done by a group called Hivemind.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. And let's see, Hivemind is... Just had my list here in front of me. They've got a whole bunch of cool things. They're also working on an adaptation of The Witcher video game. They're the people who are producing or working on the Guillermo del Toro show, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, the movie, what? I'm sorry. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and they do The Expanse.
Awesome.
And the reason why I bring up Hivemind is because they have just been given the go ahead to develop a show based on a horror comic called Gideon Falls that I've been talking about a lot lately on Talking Comics.
Tell me about this Gideon Falls, because I don't know anything about it, but initially, just like looking here at the art and shit, it looks fucking awesome.
It's amazing. It's only, I think, 4 issues in at this point. It's written by Jeff Lemire, who is one of my favorite comic book writers. And the art is by Andrea Sorrentino.
Ooh.
It's definitely the most like straight up horror thing I've ever seen from Jeff Lemire, but he's doing a great job with it. So let's see. It's basically, well, I'll give you in Lemire's words. He says, Gideon Falls is a story of madness and faith where rural mystery and urban horror collide in unexpected ways, all tied to the legend of the Black Barn. So it's one of those things that starts out with like a parallel stories running alongside each other. You have a priest who's had some kind of sketchy background go to this small town to replace their local priest who has just died or disappeared. I'm sorry. And then you also have this man who lives in a city who appears to be very paranoid and sort of off his rocker. And he is seeing a psychologist, and he's very much a recluse, and he's digging around the trash all over the city, finding bits and pieces of what he believes to be some kind of conspiracy that's going on. And it's not clear right away how they're connected, but the way that they're connected, which you learn pretty quickly in the first issue, is by this thing called the Black Barn, which is an ominous black barn that appears very suddenly and disappears, and a lot of bad things happen around the Black Barn. And this guy who's collecting the pieces of trash, he feels like he's finding pieces of something and he doesn't know what it is, but that there's something like under the surface that nobody can see. And he's collecting these like shards and little nails and bits and pieces of something that mysteriously look like bits and pieces of a barn.
Oh.
It starts out very powerfully. It really immediately jumps in and makes it clear that this is a horror story. And there's going to be really creepy and bloody and nasty things happening. But it's been fantastic so far. And so I'm really excited that they're going to turn it into a TV series. And it sounds like Hivemind are good people to deal with it. So,
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Everything you just said there makes me happy.
You guys would really enjoy it. It's supernatural. It's also like a murder mystery thing all kind of rolled into one.
So you mean it's everything we've ever wanted?
Yeah, exactly. It is exactly that. I don't think we've covered any Jeff Lemire on the show yet. He doesn't normally do horror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've talked about him kind of like in the background and in like the context of other comics, but I don't think we've talked about a comic of his directly, you know?
Yeah, his stuff tends to be a little bit more like with a supernatural side, but more kind of drama. Like he's really good with handling like human condition, like mm-hmm. people and, you know, people going through very difficult and kind of painful things. He just breaks my heart every time he writes stories. He just has a way of like breaking your heart. One of my favorite ones that I'm reading from him that's just about to wrap up and end is Descender, which is a great sci-fi robot story about a little boy, a little AI boy that wakes up and finds out that he's a companion bot, and he wakes up and finds out that his family's gone, and he's he's the last of his kind. And while he was out, the world basically turned on all of the robots and tried to destroy them. There essentially has been like a genocide going on of people killing robots because they feel that the robots are responsible for this big thing that happened. And this little boy, Tim 21, ends up traveling the universe trying to figure out like what he's supposed to do and why he's still here and what happened to his family.
That sounds like exactly the kind of depressing shit that I would love.
It's a beautiful story, Jackie. You should absolutely read it because I know that, you know, you have a soft spot for little bots.
Little bots.
Little bots with hearts.
Yep.
Tim is one. And it's just about the last issue is actually this week. So it's about to be completed. I haven't read the last one yet because I can't handle I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
Not ready to say goodbye to it.
No.
It is nice to start something that has an end, though, so you kind of know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Harrow County has wrapped up its last issue.
I need to finish it.
So if you guys.
That's another one that I don't want to end, though.
I haven't read the last one. Two of my favorite comic series have ended in the same week, and I have not read the last issue of either one. I'm holding back. So who wants to tell me about this weird news piece with the Golden State Killer?
I do.
Sounds like Sierra. Yeah, that's total Sierra tour.
There were some really freaky security footage screen grabs going around the internet. A person who looks a lot like D'Angelo, the guy who was convicted as the Golden State Killer, or not convicted yet, but is being held as the Golden State Killer. And it was right before his arrest. So he's an old man and it looks just like him. And he's out prowling like he used to. Uh-oh. And of course, everybody thought that the Golden State Killer, you know, stopped stalking people once the FBI and the police and everybody were like close to getting him. Like he got really spooked and just laid low for the rest of his life. But then there were times where some of the victims would get phone calls and they could tell that it was his voice because, like, obvious sense memory, like, you don't forget that kind of thing. And it was him being like, you want to play again? Like, this horrible, torturous stuff. But there was never any evidence that he actually went out and committed more crimes. It was just like taunting people. But now there's these photos and videos of a person who really looks like him stalking around and like going around houses and stuff. So it's almost like, ooh, they caught him just in time. Like maybe he was gonna start up again or something.
Wow, that's creepy as fuck. That is some like,
it's so creepy. Oh, it makes your skin crawl.
That's the kind of shit that you would see in a movie and think that doesn't really happen.
Yeah, for sure.
What did you see it?
I saw some photos of it. Yeah. And okay. It's really weird.
Is
because
it like security footage?
Yeah, it's like outdoor home security cameras or something like that. It looks like him in the face, and then the person who is caught on these cameras is wearing obviously fake wig, which is really weird. Like, it looks like a woman's wig, and it's being held down by a, like, sweatband. One of those, like, exercise headband things.
Oh, jeez.
So it's just that alone is very bizarre, too. And then the fact that it looks so much like this guy that we've just realized is this horrible killer is really icky.
Hmm.
So there's that. And then I also have another true crime thing that I found the other day. I realized that somebody at work who just started a little bit after I started at my new job is also really into true crime. So we've bonded a lot over it.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful friendship. I'm very excited about it. but I saw this article the other day and shared it with her about this group of amateur code breakers who think that they've discovered the identity of D.B. Cooper. And D.B. Cooper was a guy in, I want to say, the 60s or so, who hijacked a plane and got them to give him like $200,000.
Like,
and then he parachuted away.
A bizarrely specific amount of money.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And this guy, you know, D.B. Cooper is a pseudonym. There's a lot of speculation of who this actually was. But it was a time when, like, people can just be anonymous. Like, there wasn't really good ways to track people.
Yeah, people could just disappear.
Mm-hmm. So he hijacked this plane. He got the stewardess. He handed the stewardess a note. And at first she didn't read it because she thought it was just some creepy guy, like, giving her a number or something. And then a little bit later, he, like, got her attention again and was like, you should really read that note. And it was like, I'm hijacking this plane. And so then they went and they... I want to say that they unloaded everybody, got him the money, and then took him back up into the air per his request, and he parachuted out over, like, Oregon.
Yeah.
And was never seen again.
Yeah.
And so people think of him as, like, this hero because he, like, pulled one over on the man and got money and, like, is, like, a cowboy of this late 60s, early 70s. They never really discovered who this guy actually was, but then I guess... A little bit after the skyjacking, there were some letters sent into the Oregonian, which is, like, obviously the big paper in Oregon, saying, I am right here in Portland, and the $200,000 is for the revolution. He was saying that he was off in Cabo or something like that. Like, he went on this big vacation and got away from everybody through the series of letters, and now he's just, like, taunting people.
Well, that's what I would do.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Go off to an island, get away from everybody.
And then now, years later, back to present day, these amateur code breakers think that they've discovered that the actual identity of D.B. Cooper, oh God, I'm scrolling through the article because I had his name up and then I moved it. And now I can't find, is a guy named Rackshaw, who was, he wasn't a suspect, but then he was ruled out. He used to be a paratrooper and he was in the military. And some of these letters that were sent to the Oregonian had, like, little codes and numbers and things that these code breakers have tied back to his, like, army troop or whatever, to wherever, you know, whatever numbers. And I don't know how the any of that works, but they somehow tied it back to his military time. And now they're saying, like, the FBI doesn't want to believe us, or they don't want to admit that they weren't able to figure out this thing that we were able to figure out. And they're just like, they don't want to give us the credit.
I could just see them, like, a bunch of nerdy code breakers sitting around, like, one week and, like, hey, you know what? Let's find out who D.B. Cooper is. And then, you know, on Monday morning, be like, hey, FBI,
we figured it out.
We got this.
You know, this, like, super long investigation that you guys ultimately gave up on?
Yeah, we solved that.
We figured it out.
It barely took any effort.
Next stop, the Zodiac Killer. Come on, guys. Yeah, so that was a fun thing that popped up.
Sierra, a while back when Twin Peaks was rebooted, and you and I were reading a few articles related to Twin Peaks was somewhat inspired by D.B. Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember
because that, Agent Dale Cooper?
Yeah. Do you remember that there was a woman who was commenting on several articles that she thought D.B. Cooper was her father and had all this weird evidence kind of pointing toward it? Do you remember that?
Oh, that's so cool. No.
Oh, I got to find those because I was hoping you might remember the name because I don't remember the name she said. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, like, what if it is, like, what if it's all tied together? I really want to know now.
Mm-hmm.
That's her dad.
Sierra, I'm so glad that you're keeping track of all of the real scary people in the world.
Oh yeah, I got them all covered. Don't worry, guys.
If you ever hear about one in my neighborhood, please let me know.
Mm-hmm. Anytime we're traveling, we're just gonna be like, hey Sarah, anything I need to know about with scary people over
there?
Are there
any serial killers in this area?
Is this clear?
Maybe any cryptids to keep an eye out for? Yeah.
Should I bring a knife?
Oh, you should always have a knife.
If we ever leave Sierra enough time to have another podcast, she's gonna have like one of those, you know, like true crime investigative, like I figured out who this killer is kind of show.
That'd be pretty great. take over where Michelle McNamara left off.
I would subscribe to that in a heartbeat. Yeah.
So the next item that we have in the works here is apparently there's a massive amount of Stephen King adaptations.
Massive amount.
Coming up. Jackie, yes. Was a shoe.
Like a stupid amount of Stephen King stuff.
I'm looking at this list and I just want to say right away, like Pet Sematary has been long overdue.
It is actually in the works, like not just talking about it. It is actually happening now. Also, Tommyknockers is being adapted into a movie and James Wan is directing it, so that's noteworthy.
I really liked that book.
Yeah,
that was one of his.
I've never heard of a lot of these things. Should we just run down the whole list?
Oh, am I doing that? Okay.
Okay. You can go for it.
Let's take turns. So here, I'll go for the first three here. It Chapter 2 is obviously coming up. And I'm really hoping that's better than the first one.
Bill Hader is playing Grown Up Richie, and I'm super on board for that. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I've heard a couple of casting notes here and there, and I think that's, if anything's going to save it, I think that's what it's going to be, is the casting.
So. Well, I mean, the original adult actors really set the bar low.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, sure.
They could just show up and it'll be better.
Oh, James McAvoy is also on board for, mm-hmm. and Jessica Chastain.
As Bill, yep.
Like
James McAvoy could play Santa Claus and I'm on board.
James McAvoy could show up at a mall and I would be there in a heartbeat. Also, The Long Walk. I'm going to read the little excerpt here. New Line recently tapped Zodiac's James Vanderbilt to produce and write the screenplay for the adaptation of the 1979 dystopian novel set in a future America where 100 teens are picked to take part in a grueling march that only ends when a single kid is left alive. So kind of like Hunger Games before the Hunger Games here.
Yeah, geez.
I'm not familiar with that one at all.
I don't know. I haven't read that one. Sarah, have you read that one?
No, I haven't heard of that. I think I've heard the title and I maybe got it mixed up with, for some reason, I would think it was like one of the subtitles of a Green Mile installment or something like that.
Yeah.
I had no idea that's what it was actually about.
And then Tommyknockers is the third one there. But what really weirds me out about this excerpt in the article we have up here, by the way, this is an IO9 article that we are just straight up reading off of right now. is that they mention Aquaman's James Wan, not all of these horror things that he has done over the past couple decades.
You know, what everybody knows him for.
The man who single-handedly created a bizarre genre with the Saw movies, James Wan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, apparently he's making an Arachnophobia remake as well.
Oh, no, I'm not okay with that.
You don't want to see that?
Nope.
You're not lining up for that midnight show in
Third Jackie? I will. No. Set every copy on fire.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Tommyknockers is a fun one because it's in, like, New England, like every single Stephen King book. It's a small town, and so it's really about the relationships of the people in this town. But then a spacecraft crash lands, like, in the protagonist's backyard, basically. And everybody gets psychic abilities, and so they're reading each other's minds all the time, and like they kind of become a hive mind. And he figures out a way to like put like nursery rhymes and stuff in the very front of his mind so that the thoughts in the back of his mind are kind of protected, and he tries to figure out how to like save everybody, basically.
I can't help picturing like the very beginning of that incident where everybody starts reading each other's thoughts and are just like, that motherfucker.
That bitch.
I can't believe.
I always knew she was fake.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't want to know what people actually think of me.
That would be terrible.
Then we have the talisman, which doesn't sound like it's much beyond a teaser. Steven Spielberg apparently has been teasing that he might direct it, but it's been out there for like 3.5 decades. So that sounds like a little bit of a rumor. Then we have something called Dr. Sleep, which is Warner Brothers announcing that it's fast-tracked a sequel to The Shining from director Mike Flanagan.
I didn't know there was a sequel to The Shining.
The story picks up decades after the events of The Shining, and we see mysterious supernatural threats test the psychic abilities of middle-aged Danny Torrance, who, it turns out, could be played by Ewan McGregor.
Which would be so good.
Another person that I would sign on to see anything.
Love Ewan McGregor. Yep.
And then we've got Suffer the Little Children. Let's see, this one was announced almost immediately after It came out in the box office. Sean Carter will write and direct the adaptation, about a teacher trying to figure out if her young students are actually human or not.
Ooh, I haven't heard of that one.
I'm not familiar with that one either.
I'm scrolling ahead because, oh shit, there's one that I heard of recently that isn't on this list. So we can like be real reporters and not just read somebody else's article. The one that I'm thinking of is a short story, and it came out in Night Shift, I want to say. It's like the collection of short stories. It's called The Boogeyman. And I guess the people who did A Quiet Place are going to write it. And that's a short story that's about this, kind of about like, was it SIDS, infant death syndrome or whatever, that like so sad. This kid, this little baby dies. And it turns out that it's like the boogeyman in a closet. And it's about like the dad's psyche unraveling because of it.
I won't be seeing that.
I know. It's going to be really, really, really dark and awful and, you know, heavy. But it could be a really cool monster, too.
We'll tell you about it, Melissa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, SIDS is sudden infant death syndrome.
Thank you.
Legit the most terrifying thing that new parents discover exists.
You know, like all of your fears are real.
Yeah.
It could happen at any time. Oof.
Like, well, there's this thing that your baby can just randomly die from and we don't know how to prevent it or why it happens. Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Yeah. That. Also, continuing on down this list, we mentioned Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
Almost 30 years after the original movie, Paramount is having Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer. I don't know who those people are.
I don't know either.
Work on the screenplay, which should be. That'd be really fun. And a remake of Firestarter is said to be in the works.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Do it.
Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Widmeyer, best known for Starry Eyes. Jackie, is that a movie that you've talked about?
Yeah, Starry Eyes is fucking awesome.
Yeah, so that's apparently their claim to fame.
Oh, I'm so glad that all these, like, these horror movies that we've
that just made enjoyed. That more exciting, right?
Yeah, that's really good.
Way more exciting. Yeah.
All these people getting big titles now. That's so good. Firestarter is supposed to be directed by Akiva Goldsman. Universal's doing it.
Well, they claim it's this person is a mega producer.
Mega producer.
Sounds like a transformer.
It really does.
Mega producer.
It sounds like the machine that makes Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, this is totally off topic, but I hope you guys have been watching that series on Netflix about toys.
Oh, no, not yet.
No.
So good.
The Toys That Made Us, I think.
Yes, it's so fun. Start at the beginning and make your way through. It's just full of the most like entertaining and silly, nerdy shit that you'll ever see.
That's great.
That sounds awesome.
So Akiva it's Goldman, fantastic. I guess, is a big guy.
A big guy.
Did the screenplay for A Beautiful Mind. You know that little film. Best screenplay. Thing, yeah. He worked on The Dark Tower, which is admittedly not a very good Stephen King adaptation. So hopefully Firestarter will be better. But also worked on I Am Legend, the Will Smith version. So he's definitely adapted a lot before.
So far, I'm hearing of two adaptations that you bombed.
That you aren't sold on. He also did Winter's Tale, which I saw the movie, but I didn't read the book.
And just so you guys know, we're still in the list of movies right now. We haven't even gotten any TV shows yet.
Yeah.
I'm mixing up Winter's Tale and Winter's Bone. Oh, he did the recent Rings movie, which oofa-doofa.
Oofa-doofa.
Oh, no. Akiva, why don't you just go sit back down, buddy?
Mm-hmm.
We don't need you for this.
Paranormal Activity 2, Practical Magic. Anyway.
Yeah.
So he was a transformer in the, you know, in the what the fuck is his name? Bay.
Michael Bay world?
Yes, Michael Bay.
Oh, okay.
The Michael Bay Transformers. That's the kind of mega producer he is.
what an apt comparison. Well, okay, so the next three and last three of the movies that we're seeing here is Snapshot 1988, which actually is not Stephen King, but Joe Hill, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting premise.
Yeah, it's based on Cemetery Dance. Let's see here. It's set in the 80s. It's an 80s story about a young boy encountering a mysterious man who can steal memories with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds interesting. I haven't read it. Do either of you know more about it? Because I don't know more about it.
It makes me almost think of Sinister, the like creepy people in cameras idea.
Yeah, I could see that. It does really sound very Stephen King-esque, though. Mm-hmm. Also, In the Tall Grass, which is a King and Hill team-up about two siblings who investigate a sinister field after hearing the cries of a little boy from within.
Aww.
This is set up with Netflix, with James Marsden to star.
Hmm.
I know you guys aren't that big into Buffy, but James Marsden was like the reason to watch that show in the later seasons. Mm-hmm. So,
No, but I'm going to talk about Westworld tonight. So,
okay, cool. Yeah. And lastly, The Gingerbread Girl, which apparently involves Craig R. Baxley. I don't know who that is.
Oh, it's sinister. I'm going to look that up. Killer, though.
It's a King's horrifying thriller about a woman who encounters a sinister serial killer during her early morning run.
Hmm.
Let's see who Craig Baxley is real quick.
Nothing that I've really seen that he's done. Silencing Mary sounds kind of familiar. They seem like war movies. Sniper 2. Stone Cold. Oh, Action Jackson. I've heard of that. I'm
not excited.
Oh, and the Warriors. There we go. Okay. There's some context.
Apparently he's done a lot of stunts. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Stunts. He's got three times as many credits for stunts as he has for directing. So
that's an interesting career.
Yeah, right? So yeah, there are the movies.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't that many TV shows. Melissa, you want to just run through the TV shows real quick?
Okay. The TV shows, we have Castle Rock,
which is starting like this month, right?
And is it really?
It's J.J. Abrams, which I've had very good experiences with J.J. Abrams. So,
and it's on Hulu, so they probably got a nice big budget for it.
And there's The Bone Church. Apparently, there's not even a network attached to that yet. So that's, again, an early rumor, I guess. It's produced by Chris Long and Suicide Squad's David Ayer. So, Dark Tower, the movie apparently didn't do very well at all.
Yeah, the Dark Tower movie was bad. Castle Rock comes out on July 25th.
Hey, that's my birthday.
Hey, happy birthday!
Yay!
Here's a present. It's Stephen King stuff.
I'm all right with that. I'll take that.
Then there's apparently a movie or a TV show based on The Stand.
I don't know when we're going to let that one go, but I think we need to. Like, all of us need to move on from it at this point.
And, you know, speaking of Joe Hill, Lock and Key TV series is still out there being juggled around as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which, what the fuck? We've been waiting, like, forever for that. Apparently, they've had people come and go off of it. They've, you know, and now, like, Hulu backed out. And mm-hmm. so they're trying to, Netflix is negotiating a deal with it. But Netflix has some kind of requirements that they want everything kind of taken back to the drawing board, including the pilot.
Oh, wow.
So that means more setbacks. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. It's such good material. Why is it so hard for you to turn it into a TV show?
They would want to, like, throw all that work away.
Well, I mean, there must be a reason why Hulu backed out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was too extreme.
A little tidbit I wanted to tell you guys about. This is not related to Stephen King, but if you, I don't know, do either one of you have Alexa in your house?
Yep.
Technically, yeah.
So Alexa has this fun little thing called Horror Movie Adventure.
Really?
Yep. It's one of her skills. So you can go on a little horror movie adventure with her.
Fun.
Yeah. I just did this thing recently where I started looking for, like, I've been looking for new skills, and there's a whole bunch of them. There's like Haunted Adventure. There's one called Scary Tale. There's one called Radio Fear.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch. If you search, you'll find a list of, like, there's like zombie survival ones. There's horror movie taglines.
That's
but
cool.
I just,
it's like,
I don't know, I got on this thing
of storytelling.
Yeah. Well, you know how I discovered it, and you guys are gonna laugh at me, but I don't know if you watch the you know, where they announce all the new games. What the hell is it called?
Oh, E3 or?
Yeah, E3. It was on E3, and there was a little video where this guy, it was Peele.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Peele.
Yeah, I think it was Jordan Peele. I always get the two of them confused, to be honest.
Key and Michael
Key and Peele.
Jordan Peele's the one that's obsessed with horror movies, so. And he's the one that did Get Out, and he's small and adorable. And Keegan,
no, not the small one, the tall, skinny one.
Keegan is big and super nice.
So anyway, there was a funny little video where he played Skyrim on Alexa.
Oh, I remember seeing that. Yeah.
You remember that?
It was called
Alexa Plus or Alexa something. I forget what they called it. But that's real, too.
Yeah, it came out and everybody thought it was a joke and was like, no, that's a real thing. Alexa will seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, so I put it on and I tried it because my Discord group were like, okay, try it and make a video for us. So I did. I tried it and I made a little video of trying it. And then I kind of fell down a rabbit hole of, like, I wonder if there's, like, horror related skills on here. So, yeah, there's a bunch of them.
That's so funny. I'm going to have to try that out.
And like we do on this show, I just went totally off the rails from our Stephen King information. But
I think we're done with the Stephen King information anyway. So.
I also rewatched the Exorcist movie recently, the original. And I you know, what was really interesting about it was that I haven't watched it in many years, but I noticed so many things differently this time that I don't think it stood out to me the first time around. And I don't,
like, what?
I mean, I've seen it many times, but you know how you watch something, like, at different times of your life and you kind of pay attention to it in a different way?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Have you not seen it since having Max?
I don't, probably not. But, you know, to be honest, the like, mother-daughter thing didn't really get to me much.
Okay.
I know a lot of people think The Exorcist is the scariest movie ever, and I think it's one of those, it has to do with, like, the time that it came out,
yeah,
and sort of, you know.
The subject matter.
For me.
The culture.
Yeah, yeah. And we know horror is very, like, it's very objective, right? So it kind of depends on, like, what your fear is.
Mm-hmm.
The Exorcist has never been that scary to me.
Do you mean subjective?
Subjective, sorry. Yeah. Did I say objective?
I mean, I hope that in a few decades, Get Out won't be as scary because it, like, won't be as real.
Yeah, yeah. But it depends on, like, what your fears are, right?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I've never found, like, the whole demonic, like, religious thing truly scary. Mm-hmm. I like exorcist movies. Or, like, exorcism movies. They're really interesting. And possession, but I never thought it was super scary. But anyway, this time around, one of the things that I noticed in particular were the priests. The two young priests, and I should be more prepared with this, with the names of these men. Yeah, Damien Karras was the young guy who came to the house originally to help. And then there was Father Dyer, who was his like, a friend of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an early scene where he's there, like, playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Father Dyer. And he's playing the piano and, like, everyone's gathered around him and he's doing this, like, Broadway thing and he's trying to tell everybody, like, how to sing.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, like, leading how they go through the song, and he's kind of, like, the party master. And then there's Damien, who shows up he's the first one that tries to help Regan. And he is obviously, you know, he's got an alcohol problem. And then there's the scene where Father Dyer goes to visit Damien, or Father Karras goes to visit him. And in his apartment, and, like, you know, it's obvious that Father Karras is there. I'm just going to call him Damien because that's what they say a lot, that he's got a drinking issue and he's depressed because his mother just passed away. And he starts kind of like crying. He falls over and like cries in the lap of Father Dyer. Mm-hmm. And Father Dyer like puts him into bed and gently takes his shoes off and covers him up and tells him to like get some sleep and some rest. But all the relationships that they keep showing between these two, I don't know if this is a thing that other people already know about the movie, but it never struck me before. But it seemed like there was an underlying like intimate love between these two men. Hmm. That, you know, obviously whether it's because of the time or whether it's because they're priests was not in the open. But I was like, man, these two, they kind of like, I kind of feel like they really love each other in a different way.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And Father Dyer is the one who's there holding Damien's hand after he falls to the bottom of the steps and dies. He's down there like holding his hand in a very, you know, in the way of like how people in love would hold each other as one person is dying. And and I thought, wow, I don't know if that's an intentional thing that's written into this movie. I don't remember ever hearing anybody talk about it.
That's like the relationship.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, I've been really wanting to rewatch The Exorcist too. So I'm going to keep that in mind when I do.
Yeah. You guys know that The Exorcist, like the filming around it, is supposedly cursed.
Yeah. I love stories like that about
all of the like deaths and misfortune that came to anybody associated with it.
That in Amityville, the original Amityville is cursed too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that's an episode topic right there.
Yeah. Cursed movies. Yeah, that's a really good episode topic.
Maybe that's episode 50.
Hurry up and write that down before you forget.
Yeah, God, we forget this shit all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting trivia around these old movies too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When you start reading into them. Anyway, I think there was something else, but now I can't remember what it was. But there were a lot of things that I noticed in this time around that like it hadn't stood out to me before.
I love rewatching movies that you haven't seen in a while and noticing those little things that, like you said, will come up with just because you're just in a different period of your life and open to noticing those kinds of things, really.
Yeah. And I think just like, you know, whatever your focus is and in your life at that point, you know, it's just weird to watch it. And I thought, is there there's a gay love affair going on here that I never stood out to me before.
Maybe.
That's awesome.
Jackie, you mentioned James Marsden, right?
Yes.
Wait, am I thinking of the right Marsden? That's James Marsden in Westworld, right?
Insanely intense cheekbones.
Yeah, I think it's the same guy.
He's just much older now.
Sure, yeah.
So, are you guys watching Westworld?
No.
Sorry. That's been on my list of things to watch, but there's so much good TV on right now.
And this is some of the best TV right now. Like production value alone, this TV is so much. This show is so much eye candy. It really will twist your brain. But anyway, season 2 just wrapped up. I can't say a lot about it because a lot of people probably haven't seen it. I don't want to spoil anything. But goddamn, the show is amazing. We rewatched the entirety of season 1 with a friend of ours. We have this friend of ours who has suddenly discovered that there's all this great stuff out there she's never seen, like Game of Thrones and Westworld. So we did our whole rewatch of Game of Thrones with her, and then we rewatched season 1 of Westworld before we watched season 2. It's, man, this show is incredible. It's the kind of show that you have to be okay with not understanding what's happening until a good way into it.
All right. And
I think it's okay to do that in this show because, you know, it's gonna be annoying to watch a show like that if it's not paying you off in some other way. But this show is a huge payoff in like acting, production value, costumes. Like there's so many things going on in this show that are just, you know, are worth watching every episode, even if you can't figure out what's happening until 3/4 of the way in. But it's like an onion. I was talking to a client the other day about it. And she's like, yeah, it's kind of like an onion where it's just got all these layers and like, they only let you like peek into some of them, you know, they kind of like halfway peel back one and then they peel one back all the way. So you feel a little bit better, but then they don't peel the other one back that's right next to it. So you're kind of left. And it's just, yeah, it's a brilliant show. And the acting is so fantastic. Thandi Newton is a standout on this show. And it's got nothing to, don't worry about the movie, the old movie. It's got nothing to do with that. It's not connected really other than name. Tessa Thompson is in this and she's fantastic. Anthony Hopkins, Ed Harris. who's really, really amazing.
I didn't know Anthony Hopkins was in it. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a very large part in this. He's kind of at the center of this world, quite literally. And James Marsden, a grown-up, scruffy James Marsden. And Evan Rachel Wood. There's so much talent in this show. And it's just absolutely stunning. It's just a beautifully made show. But anyway, season one and season two, they both have like their own kind of onions that they have to peel back. And you get into season two and you think, all right, now I know what's going on. Like, I'm on this train. I know what's going on. I got it figured out. And then season two, they're like, yeah, no, we're going to fuck with you a little bit more. And they start to twist things. And like, you have to do it all over again. Or you're like, you know, you just have to hang in there and go, okay, I don't understand, but I'm going to. And it's one of those shows that once I got to the conclusion of season two, I've been like, I can't stop watching videos about it now. I can't stop watching like the theories and the Easter eggs. And, you know, I just want to know everything about how it was made. And I've been watching, oh, Jackie, you would really appreciate it. There's some like really amazing physical effects.
Yeah.
On this show. There's a great video I was watching recently about it where they make this, they call them hosts. They're essentially droids, you know. And they make the host kind of get this one guy gets like his head like sliced in half and it just opens up like a can. And they show how they did this and how they used like prosthetics on a person's head to create this effect. It's really, really great. Really great special effects and just everything. So, yeah,
that is one thing that I've heard universally about it is that the effects are incredible.
They are. And it's just, you know, it's like Westerns are not normally my thing, but this isn't really. It's a sci-fi show. It's a sci-fi show set in, you know, a Western theme, but it's really very, very character driven. So like, you know, it's one of those shows that like, once you get to know a few of the characters better, then you feel really invested in them. And there's people that you want to die painfully. And there's people that you want to see like make it, you know,
like
you just get really invested. But yeah, you guys got to check it out so that we can talk about it more. Because it's also the kind of show that you can't say anything about without spoiling, because the whole thing has to be like carefully, you know, opened layer by layer.
Right.
It's beautiful. Sierra, tell me about The Staircase, because it keeps popping up on my Netflix thing and I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, so The Staircase, keeping in the theme with true crime. This is a case that happened in 2002-ish. This woman was found at the bottom of the stairs and the husband called 911 and was saying like, she fell, it's an accident, she fell. He was outside by the pool and she, you know, they had been drinking wine all night and she went up to go to bed and she fell and had this horrible accident. So the police come and they find so much blood. They find that the woman has at least six giant lacerations on her head, but no bruising or any damage to her brain. So it's like these very, very bizarre wounds that don't really make sense with a fall, but also don't totally make sense with a beating. So this documentary is about the trial of the husband.
Oh, was this on Netflix right now?
Yeah, who was accused of murdering his wife. So it goes through the original trial, and then, not to spoil it too much, but it comes back 8 years later with a continuation of what happens. So the original documentary was made at the time that it was happening, and then now Netflix picked it up and let them do these extra episodes to kind of conclude the story.
Interesting.
And it really doesn't make you feel great about the justice system and due process and all of that.
Were you feeling good about that before?
I certainly wasn't.
That's so fair question.
But it's another example. And it's very interesting that this documentary crew got to actually film so much in the courtroom and behind the scenes and everything. They got a lot of clearance and a lot of creative liberty with it. And it's also interesting because in the time and place that it all happened, it was in South Carolina in, you know, early 2000s. Part of the case against him was that they discovered that he was secretly bisexual and he was like soliciting men to have sex with him. So their defense was like, he's in this loving relationship and this perfect marriage, he would never want to hurt his wife. But then they're like, well, he's gay, so how could that be a perfect marriage? It's also about kind of the prejudice against him, too. And this guy, the husband, is a fiction writer. So he's also just a very interesting storyteller, too, in his way with words. And so he's an interesting character to follow through this whole process. And it's so good. It's so good that I was originally watching it. And Tucker isn't super into horror. He claims that he is, but really he isn't. And he's certainly not into true crime and like the real kind of murders and things as much as I am. But I was watching it and he was like on his computer and he like started kind of paying attention. And then he got really roped into it and like really invested. So then by the end, he was like asking to watch it, see how it was concluded. So it's very good.
I've actually been hearing about that a lot lately and how amazing it is. So I'm mm-hmm. glad to hear your review of it. That's definitely going on my to watch list.
Yeah, and it's also interesting about like the whole family dynamics. This family, he has two biological sons from a previous marriage, and then she has the woman who died had a biological daughter, and then he also adopted two daughters. So it's like this whole mod podge of different people coming into this family, and then once this event happens, there's like a whole splintering. People who are with him are very, very with him, and then the people who are against him are very, very against him. It is very pro him and following his case, seeing his side of the story, but then you also kind of see the wife's side of the family, especially like going up against him and being really vile the whole time. Hmm. For good reason, because their sister died this horrible, horrible way.
Yeah,
that's one of those ones that Netflix keeps telling me to watch, and I've like watched the premise, you know, look at the description a couple times, but mm-hmm. like I don't know, I can't tell if I'm gonna like it or not. Mm-hmm. But Sierra said I should watch it, so I'm gonna.
Yep, yeah, it's good.
Jackie, you have several things you want to tell us about.
Yeah, I've got some recommendations for y'all.
Yay!
Missed some recommendations.
I have a couple of artist recommendations, and then I want to tell you about the bullshit that I listen to at night when everyone's asleep. Okay, so the first recommendation I want to mention is an artist named Jordan Constance Witt. She's actually a listener of ours, and I discovered her through Twitter because she was talking to us through the Sirens Twitter like a year ago or some shit. I literally just noticed last week, because I'm a terrible person sometimes, that she is an incredible artist. She has such a unique and really interesting style. I am in love with like her subject matters and her use of color. And I mean, Jordan is one incredibly badass, spooky babe as it is. But then when you throw this layer of this amazing artistry on top of it, it's like I'm already married, but I can make an exception, you know? But seriously, she has some really, really cool shit going on there. She's on Instagram as Spooky Wit with two T's, or she's got her own site as JordanConstanceWit.com. And of course, we'll give links there, but I'm a little bit blown away by her art right now.
It's very like pop art.
Yeah.
Like big bold colors. I really have to like look closely at some of these to figure out what I'm looking at.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in
there is. There's a lot going on.
In a very fun way. I dig it a lot.
It's like horror whimsy.
Yeah. That's a good
It's very whimsical.
The other artist I want to mention is a very well-known artist. People will recognize him from his artwork with Nine Inch Nails. Rob Sheridan. He actually did all of the glitch art for Nine Inch Nails in the early 2000s. And from what I understand, I think he actually still goes on tour with Nine Inch Nails to do like the background art that's on the stage and whatnot. But he has a whole series of horror art. Horror glitch art specifically, where he pulls screen grabs from specific horror films or horror photography and physically manipulates the film.
Nice.
Yeah, to pull this very ethereal feeling glitch art from mm-hmm. these various sources. And I absolutely love it. And he's been like a recent social media obsession for me lately. Like he is very politically active on Twitter, and as anyone who follows me will know, that's been kind of my whole world lately.
Mm-hmm. It's Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter and yelling at people on Twitter. Like the nice robot I am. So his awesome art combined with his politics has really caught my attention lately, so wanted to pull.
Looks like he's doing a comic book series for Vertigo right now.
Yes, he is. Yes, I meant to mention that too. I don't really know much about it so far.
I don't know. It's called High Level. I just saw it. I'm looking up his Twitter right now. Yeah. So I just saw it. I don't know it either, but I'm going to look it up.
That's it for my actual recommendations. But a couple things I did want to also mention is that I rewatched The Descent recently.
I love that movie.
This is one of those that, like, I watched it when it first came out, and I didn't pay attention because I was a hooligan. And, I feel like I had forgotten everything about it because it's one of those films that, like, people have raved about over the years. So I'm like, was it good? So mm-hmm. clearly, like, I missed out on something there. Like, it's not everybody else that's the asshole here. It's clearly me. So I just decided to rewatch it. And one thing that really struck me is that I completely forgot that it was filmed in Western North Carolina, which is where I spent half of my teenage years and almost all of my 20s. So them going through these cabins and hiking through these woods and, you know, discovering these weird cave systems and shit kind of hit a little close to home there because, you know, that's kind of what we did, like, in high school, is go out into the woods and find some place to explore and smoke pot.
You're lucky you survived.
On the rewatch, I am willing finally to admit that, yes, I do like The Descent. It is cool. Those are some badass babes.
It's cool. I think it's important too, because for its time, it was really, you know, it was really ahead of its time as far as like writing decent female characters in mm-hmm. horror films.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely what struck me, is that the women, I mean, a couple of them were pretty two-dimensional characters, but the ones that we were focusing on had a lot going on. Like, they were very mm-hmm. compelling characters.
I've explored little caves here and there and during my time in Florida, and I have always found caves to just be in, not like, not your normal, like, giant high-ceilinged, you know, pretty stalagmite kind of caves, but like the kind of caves that you have to like squeeze in between walls and shimmy around things. It's super like unsettling. And I'm not even claustrophobic, but just unsettling, the idea that you can't quickly move or get to another space when you need to.
Yeah, there are elements of like real kind of hidden caves that are so unique to cave systems, for one, like the claustrophobia, as you touched on there, but also like, there's a difference between being dark and being pitch black. And when people mm-hmm. say they're afraid of the dark or, you know, something spooky in the dark, that doesn't refer to the pitch black that you get in a cave system where you literally cannot see a goddamn thing. And there's also, you know, you can't hear anything. It's a complete sensory deprivation kind of feeling. And it's bizarre and eerie and unique to that experience. So that's...
it's a whole other world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's creepy as shit, basically.
Mm-hmm. Up here we have lava tubes.
Like ooh,
in,
what?
In, yeah,
lava tubes.
In, around Bend and in Northern California, especially.
The fuck is a lava tube?
It's just like, tubes in the ground from where lava used to be.
What?
And now I guess there's no more lava. I don't know where it went.
What?
I wouldn't crawl down the tube to find out where it
no,
went.
Absolutely no, absolutely not. If there was one kind of like,
it makes me think of like the people that like stick their eye in the keyhole when there's something out on the other side of the door. You know, it's like I don't care if it was there or if it is there. I'm not going to stick my body in there and find out.
If it was there once, it can be there again.
In Oregon, pools. We would go there. We went to lava tubes in 5th grade and in 6th grade. And when we went in 6th grade, we were about to descend into the tube, and like we were going down this ladder, there was a little baby bunny down there.
Oh, really?
And we rescued it.
Oh, that makes me happy.
From the lava and the monsters.
I have literally never in my life heard of this phenomenon of lava tubes.
Oh yeah,
that's so bizarre.
It's definitely a thing.
I immediately got a picture in my head of like people climbing into lava tubes and being shot out like the cannonball people in the circus. Which probably wouldn't happen because the lava would just decimate you before you got shot out at the end. But, you know, that's the way I imagine it.
Another thing I wanted to mention was all the weird podcasts I've been listening to. So it's no secret by now that I stay up for days at a time and do weird shit in the middle of the night. So while I'm doing stuff in the middle of the night, I like to listen to scary stories. So I've been getting on this kick of listening to spooky stories via podcasts. It started with the Black Tapes. Actually, I think it started before that, but I don't have a great memory. But the Black Tapes, while they were somewhat interesting to begin with, I felt like they got really fake, like really overprocessed by the end of it. Like it was pissing me off that every 5 minutes a story had to listen to like 15 minutes of really terrible ads. And
it's frustrating.
So I've been getting frustrating at that kind of general idea. And their formatting, I do actually kind of like the reporter investigating a paranormal crime kind of thing, but I felt like the acting got really fake by the end of that whole thing. So I've been out looking for more instances of interesting horror podcasts. And a couple that I've come by are Limetown, which I was talking to Sierra about the other day because I know Sierra has a penchant for podcasts like that as well. And Limetown does kind of start out with that weird fake feeling that the Black Tapes gives you. But it very, very, very quickly takes a sudden turn and turns into something far more interesting, for one. I don't want to give anything away, but we were talking earlier in tonight's episode about mind reading and shit like that. And if you listen to Limetown, that's going to come back up there in a very fun and terrifying way. And Limetown is supposedly coming back this year. It was actually recorded back in 2015, but they're doing season 2 sometime this year. So I'm interested to hear that. And the one I'm listening to right now is Tribulation. Have you guys heard that
ooh,
one?
I don't know what that one is.
No.
Okay, so Tribulation, just to give you a general idea, is a couple is driving home from visiting the woman's family in rural Texas or some shit. And they hear this really bizarre religious sermon on the radio that kind of comes out of nowhere. And the sermon is very strange and the kind of thing they're like, what the fuck are we even listening to? This doesn't really sound like good Christians spreading the word of God here. What's going on? And so they track the studio that it's supposedly being recorded at and they go to investigate it and shit just goes crazy from there. Like, I can't even I can't even give you an idea of where it goes from there without really going on like a half an hour rant here. Never mind spoilers and shit. So, but so far I would recommend it. I'm not quite through the whole thing. I'm like two episodes from the end, but so far it's kind of a wild ride there.
That sounds awesome.
I like it. The last podcast I want to mention here is Nightmare on Film Street, which is kind of like a little bit like our podcast. It is very much just a horror podcast of news and reviews and various shit that's going on in the world of horror. And it's hosted by two very entertaining horror junkies there. Some people that we should be friends with, at the very least.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody should be friends with us. I mean, let's be honest. Well, I think that's about everything we have this time, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, if we thought for like three more minutes, we could probably make another list, but...
Let's not. Let's save that for another time.
I'm already down the rabbit hole of haunted movie sets, so we'll save that for next time.
I'm going to look up lava tubes when this is over. That's what I'm going to look up.
I've already Google image searched it. It's not what I was expecting, but it's very interesting. No. Yeah. It is caves, but it's very specific looking caves.
Oh, yeah. It's not what I expected, like literal tubes.
Mm-hmm.
Not like nicely, you know, honed, smooth sided.
It's so
tunnels.
Picturesque looking.
Yeah. They're kind of more like tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, Sierra, that sounded a lot scarier than it really is.
Don't let me have it.
I mean, it is scary if there's lava in them. But apparently there's not.
Down there.
So we're going to wrap this one up. And who knows what we're going to do next time. Maybe we'll think of something crazy before our next episode rolls around.
Probably haunted movie sets. I mean, damn.
Hell yeah.
Apparently all we need to do is do an episode with no topic to come up with a whole list of new topics.
Honestly, we should go back and listen to some of our old topics because we spout on this shit all the time and then not write it down.
So if you guys have been enjoying our little horror show here, please take a moment and leave the Sirens of Scream a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. This really helps us to grow our audience so we can keep doing our show for more time to come. We also love being guests on other podcasts. So if you have a podcast and you'd like us to sit in or, you know, take your show off the rails for you, let us know. Because we'll do it. We're at your service. We love to hear from you. So if you can reach out and you want to give us your comments or suggestions on what you want to hear us talk about, you can reach us via email at sirens@sirensofscream.com. On Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. And Facebook, you can find us at Sirens of Scream. You can find all of our past episodes and tons of show notes and all our recommendation links at sirensofscream.com. So you can keep up on all the fun stuff that we blab about on the show. Sierra, where can people find you online?
I'm at Sierra Houck on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff.
Jackie, where would we find you?
I'm Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram.
Beep boop.
Beep boop.
And you can find me at Lissa Punch on Twitter and Instagram, and also on the Talking Comics podcast. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Sweet dreams, everybody.
November 57, there's a story gotta tell about a plain and simple man took a small town straight to hell. Folks were scared, folks were talking, and women were hanging around, talking about a farmer who lived outside their town. Eddie Gein, boy sure takes his mama if you know just what I mean. Eddie Gein, don't go hanging around with old Edward Gein. Now Ed was quiet, Ed was nice, and he missed his mama bad. Didn't know much about women, 'cause mom was all he had. Sometimes in the dead of night with moonlight all around, he put on women's body parts from corpses in the ground. Eddie Gein, Eddie Gein, boy sure digs his women if you know.
thought her dead. Sheriff found her dressed up in the back of Eddie's shed. Eddie Keen, nipple belts, human skulls, he thought his place was keen. Found someone put it on eBay, thought they'd make a sale.